Koketso Sachane on SAFM.
21 minutes to 9. Tomorrow, across the African continent, we mark World Water Day, knowing water to be a right, of course, worth fighting for. But even when the taps and the dams are dry, we don't do what it takes. We don't do what it takes to fight for water, or not for clean water. We are polluting our water, and at such a rate that tomorrow's kids won't have the chance to fight for it either. I mentioned at the beginning of the program, when leading up to this conversation, that Karen King, Climate Resilience Director at Royal Haskonin DHV, argues, and I tend to agree, that as we examine our climate change policies, we need to see droughts and flooding as two sides of the same coin. We have, as a country, not only endured droughts, but also seen the terrible and devastating floods, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, where residents there continue still to survive from that, or striving to survive from the devastation left behind. And we join now on the line Climate Resilience Director at Royal Haskonin, Karen King. Karen, thank you very much for making time. Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thank you for having me on the show, and happy Human Rights Day.
Happy Human Rights Day to you as well. The importance of linking this conversation, the right to water, and also, of course, most importantly, the overall conversation around climate change and policies around climate change, and them being equally important and very much part and parcel of the human rights that we enjoy and that should be protected, Karen. The importance of this conversation for you, specifically talking water.
Absolutely. I mean, I could not possibly have said it better. The country's current crisis and our climate-related water issues really do impact our human rights and our quality of life. So the right to water and to sanitation is a fundamental human right. Our South African Water Services Act provides that every person has right of access to basic water supply and sanitation services. And this means that every water services institution must take steps to realize these rights. The key elements of these rights are accessibility, affordability, and quality. And what this means in practical terms, and at the most basic level in the country, is that every person should have access to a minimum of 25 litres of clean water per person per day. And this needs to be available within 200 metres of every household. So in kind of the most vulnerable areas, this means that every standpipe should serve no more than 100 people or 25 households and should really be a permanent source of water. And the risks that inadequate water availability pose really are very, very significant. I mean, too little water for human consumption and sanitation leads to disease and even death. And insufficient water to support agriculture threatens food security. We can take this even further and see that our rural areas, for example, have been particularly vulnerable in the past. Subsistence crop fails, and this can destabilize entire communities and even trigger social unrest. This can then intensify migration to urban areas and end up with peri-urban slums. And that, of course, then puts further pressure on human infrastructure. So much as water is one of the human rights, the lack thereof infringes on more than just one or two of our human rights, but a number of them.
What I've found, especially when one talks climate change, Karen, and this might be the overthinker, conspiracy theorist absorbing too much across the world, is that I've found that for a very long period of time, there was a lot of back and forth debate, arguments, counter arguments around the whole question of climate change. And I've seen it also be part of these geopolitical debates around what is and what isn't. Is there a way where we can sift through all of that noise and fully understand what is the issue and how serious it is?
Yes, absolutely. And you're right. There are debates about the extent to which various communities are affected and various parts of the world are affected, and how, and whether it's climate change and whether it's something else. But certainly there is general agreement now that the climatic changes that we're seeing are causing, among other things, more frequent intense rainfall events, which leads to flooding and more severe prolonged droughts. And this we're seeing globally. So looking at the local extreme climatic events that we're all very well aware of, Cape Town's narrow avoidance of day zero in 2017, and this was as a result of a drought that had been a five-year drought leading up to what happened and what we all saw in 2017. This should really have been a once-in-a-century event. And instead, climate change has made this three times more likely to occur. Similarly, as you mentioned earlier, there was the 2022 floods in Durban, which were the most catastrophic natural disaster ever recorded in the whole of the province. And studies have found that climate change has doubled the likelihood of extreme rainfall occurring. So in that case, from once in every 40 years to once in every 20 years. And easy as it is to see why, floods and droughts are often treated as distinct phenomena. They seem like they have different lead times. We really do need to view these as two sides of the same coin, as you said. So, for example, as we know, periods of droughts are affecting agricultural yield, they're interrupting business operations, they're impacting the natural environment, and we're seeing this all the time. But over and above this, they're also leading to a deficit in soil moisture, which basically means the soils are drying out. This leads to extensive vegetation loss, and vegetation roots really bind soil, which means without these, the soil is very vulnerable to erosion, especially when the rains return. And as you've said, often these rainfall events are much more intense. So when this happens, the soil ends up in the rivers and in the dams, often as sedimentation. And this in turn decreases the storage capacity of the dams. So when the next drought hits, and it will, we have less stored water available to mitigate these effects. And as the cycle repeats itself, it gets worse. And this can decimate large areas and severely affect communities living within them.
I touched on it earlier, and you have repeated what you have said before around looking at drought and floods as two issues of the same coin, and linking that specifically when we now talk policymakers, what they should be considering, Karen, and maybe an opportunity to send a message to those who are hoping to either return to Parliament or even end up in Parliament post May 29th. When talking about this issue, yes, we have the climate change bill, which was passed last year, but there is more that still needs to be done.
Yes, very much so. So drought and flood policies must consider factors beyond just mitigating against damage, human consumption and production needs. They need to investigate how we can create enabling environments and how we can encourage water stewardship within this. In late 2023, South Africa's National Assembly passed our long-awaited climate change bill, and this seeks to enable an effective response to climate change and to ensure a just transition within our country to a low-carbon and climate-resilient society. And as government continues to enact these policies, more detail really does need to be paid to flood and drought. South Africa, of course, has some very unique challenges. And policy makers really do need to consider these within the plans they make. So firstly, South Africa is a semi-arid country. It's one that's already lost a third of its farms to water scarcity since the 1990s. And as we know, it's the most unequal society in the whole world. So new policies must account for the most vulnerable members of our society. And it's these people who are typically affected by disasters and all disasters the most. And then lastly, in addition to developing world-class policies, we really need to implement them effectively too. And while South Africa often does develop really good world-class policies, we're not as good as implementing these. So updating our policies and our frameworks to enable climate resilience needs to incorporate two concepts essentially. One would be creating enabling environments, as I said, and the other is encouraging what we're calling water stewardship. So, for example, an enabling environment through policy can be seen within our energy policies, how we've lifted the private energy generation cap and we're offering tax incentives for private solar installations. And this has dramatically increased the uptake of solar installations in the country. In the same way, effective drought and flood management policies would do well to enable private businesses and individuals to be part of the solution. And then water stewardship, which is really looking at a water problem, not in isolation and not just at a site, but looking beyond your fence line, effectively, uphill, downhill, upstream and downhill. It's key because it acknowledges that human behavior really lies at the heart of effectively implementing our climate policies. So if we don't change the way we use, manage, and care for water resources, we're very unlikely to see an impact. So insights we're seeing from the behavioral science should inform new and updated policies as a means of helping South Africans play more of a role in facilitating the country's climate change transition and really being a part of the solution.
When one... I just did a quick look, and I just need to, sorry, my apologies, Karen. I just need to very quickly, if we can pause for a second, to take a quick break. And I do have what I think is an important question about the role as that we play as average South Africans in being part of the policy making, and also, of course, playing our role in preserving the planet and ensuring that we do adhere to whether the bills that we spoke of already, the climate change bill, or what you yourselves are suggesting at what as what else needs to be considered by lawmakers. A quick break and we continue with Karen King. It is The Meeting Point on SAFM.
The Meeting Point on SAFM.
At 8 minutes to the hour of nine, Greg, of course, has got the latest news at nine. We continue our conversation with Karen King. Karen, again, thank you very much for your patience. Where I want to conclude, really, again, I find the conversation around climate change to, at times, be academic and very highbrow.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered, if we are going to talk about the need for whether it is expecting or looking at our lawmakers coming up with further policies, as you've spoken of, and in turn also implementing those policies, is enough being done in ensuring that the discussion, the messaging, the understanding of issues of climate change go beyond the academic?
So, I mean, it's a complex question, but yes, in some sectors they are, in some sectors they aren't. We think that humans really can do is change their mindset, really. We have to be a part of the solution here and in the rest of the world. And awareness is absolutely key. So spreading the word, speaking about this, bringing it up in conversation is absolutely essential. Two of our key strengths as humans and as South Africans is really our voting power, and it's also our spending power. So spending in places where less plastic is used, where people are quite actively looking at ways in which to reduce plastic, reduce wrapping, use plastics, not use plastic straws, that sort of thing is also very, very important. Keeping up political pressure is very, very important as well. If where possible, we need to transform our transport. So for South Africans, it can be quite hard. Our public transport is not quite as it is in elsewhere in Europe. But just to be aware of it, to carpool where we can, to where we can not fly, if we can, if there's any way of transporting ourselves without flying, that's another thing to look at. We can tweak our diets. I know there's a lot more emphasis now on meat-free Mondays and things like that. And one of the very important things about that is, of course, again, awareness. A lot of focus has been on not eating beef. That's absolutely key, really. And some scientists have said that if we just eliminated the beef trade, really, we would make a huge difference. I don't think that's the most popular answer for the majority of South Africans, but that is one way to make a dramatic difference. And then really shopping local and buying sustainable. That's, I think, in my opinion, that's where we've got that's where we're the strongest, where we've got the most power. And then, of course, not wasting food. And it all relates back to an understanding, to an awareness, and really to a shift in our mindset. And as things become more acceptable, and certainly as behaviors become less acceptable, people do start to change.
Karen, we appreciate your time, and I think we do have a couple of areas to consider as to the role that we can play as per your suggestion. Thank you very much for making time for us this evening.
Not at all, and thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you. Karen King is Climate Resilience Director at Royal Skonin DHV. Your thoughts on this? We've got a few minutes before we get to the latest news at 908-600-2032, or send us your WhatsApp voice notes on 0614-104-107.